Okay, welcome to Outry TV, a video and podcast series bringing you stories of LGBTIQ people and allies from across the globe as we face the pandemic together. I'm Yvonne Wamari, the Africa Program Officer at Outright Action International. And for today's episode, I'll be talking to Ishmael Bahati from Kenya. Ishmael, welcome to Outright TV.
Thank you very much, Yvonne.
Great, Ishmael. Nice to have you here. And nice to have an opportunity to have one of these chats. So we'll just jump right into it. So, of course, Ishmael, we'd like to get to know a little bit more about you. So tell us about yourself. Who is Ishmael and what do you do?
Thank you very much, Yvonne. Yeah, my name is Ishmael Bahati. I am a civil, an activist working on social inclusion, specifically for the LGBT persons. And I also work for an LGBT organization called Pema Kenya. I'm the executive director. And I'm also an activist for LGBT rights in Kenya.
Great. So Ishmael, what does Pema Kenya do? Can you tell us a little bit more about Pema Kenya?
Yes. Pema Kenya is an LGBT organization. Pema Kenya started in 2008 and officially registered in 2009. As an LGBT organization, as community-based organization. And Pema Kenya basically works to ensure inclusion of LGBT in the service uptake. So service uptake is not just about health, it's about access to justice, access to social spaces, and freedom of expression, being able to meet, you know, as LGBT persons. We work on all the spectrums of the LGBT with the presence of all the LGBTI, you know, like the lesbians, the transgender, the bisexual, the intersex persons presence in Pema Kenya. So Pema Kenya is based in the coastal region of Mombasa. Sometimes it's mistaken as a coalition, but Pema Kenya is an independent organization and does not work in partnership with other organizations, but is not a membership for other organizations, but individual members. So basically, that's an overview of Pema Kenya. It consists of 220 LGBT members registered. So for us to register, you've got to be an LGBT person identifying. You must have two people who already know you, who are already members of Pema Kenya, and you must be willing to support the vision of Pema Kenya. Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much, Ishmael. We are in quite a pickle, in quite a situation right now with the COVID pandemic. That has really changed the situation, has really changed the environment in which we are working in, the environment in which we are living in. So can you give the listeners just a little insight into the COVID situation in Kenya, both the pandemic and the government response to the pandemic, with us, of course, with a specific focus on the impact that it has had on the LGBTI community in Kenya?
Yeah, so I'm sure that worldwide COVID-19 came with challenges to almost everyone. I don't think there's someone that has been spared. And one thing that I would say that COVID has acted as an equalizer to some of the things that we have never experienced as LGBT persons. You know, there are things that have been specifically for LGBT persons or looked at as LGBT for LGBT persons, but this time COVID came with challenges that are unifying. So just like everyone will talk about lack of employment, loss of jobs, LGBT persons will speak to the same. Now, the only unique thing about COVID-19 has impacted on us is that there has been, maybe I'll be jumping, but there has been also support from the government, for example, and the LGBT persons cannot access these services, this relief, because already in the villages they are staying, the relief were being given to the village elders, and the village elders are the very people that have been harsh on LGBT people and are not accepting to LGBT people. So that's one of the impact that we could not even access those services. So now, let me take you back to our lives as LGBT persons. For one, LGBT persons, majority of the members that I lead have been excommunicated from their families. Now, with the coming of COVID, and everyone was aware that how the COVID would look like, we were aware, but then we were not exact on what would happen. For example, we knew that there would be hardship, but we did not know that people would lose livelihood. We did not know that people would not be able to pay rents and will be evicted. So with this in mind, people opted to go back to the villages, you know, to their relatives who once shunned them and excommunicated them because they were not able to continue to support their own lives, you know. Then, unfortunately for the coastal region LGBT persons, we were the first, our government, the county government of Mombasa, was the first to announce the restrictions. For example, the beauty parlors were closed, the gyms were closed, the sex work, the night curfews was enforced. And meaning that sex workers could not work. Majority of some of our membership are sex workers. So that meant that livelihood was actually lost. So most of our members also do small food vending, for example, operating kiosks that sell food to passerbys or people who live in the village. And all these were closed down. So Mombasa was the first hit, and therefore, the people that were trying to make ends meet, the LGBT that were trying to make ends meet, their livelihood was shut down in a moment. You know, just a week after the first reporting of COVID-19 in Kenya, the first week, everything was at a standstill in Mombasa, as much as other places in the country were operating. So basically, we reached that level where people are already calling for support, you know, for help, you know. People are asking for money to go back to the villages. But where were you getting this money? We did not have any funder who was already funding us at that time. So we had to reach out to start mobilizing, you know, to start mobilizing for funders who can support the LGBT person. At that time, we were only looking at those who were calling us, who want to go home, we would support them to go home. Those who wanted to stay, but they wanted alternative, you know, like, for example, to be supported for a person to accept to live with them, you know, those kind of arrangements. Yeah, so basically, access to services was also closed. Now, coming in of the lockdown, you know, Mombasa, Pema Kenya serves membership outside Mombasa County. So we serve membership within Kilifi County, we serve members within Lamu County, we serve members within Kwale County. With the closing of Mombasa, came a lack of access, you know, not able to access health services for members of LGBT community beyond who are outside Mombasa, because Mombasa was actually locked. And therefore that meant that those who are on ARVs who had not taken ARVs for a longer period did not have access to those services. Those who had STIs and were being on treatment, were on continuous treatment in Mombasa County, could not access the same out, because again, Pema Kenya, we only work with our jurisdiction was within the Mombasa County, and therefore the clinics or the public hospitals that we work with are within in Mombasa County. And that means that if Mombasa is locked, those people that are outside Mombasa were locked. And even planning to take the same services to them was not possible, because then we could not move out of Mombasa. So basically, that's an overview of how the impact of COVID looked like at the beginning and actually towards up to this level.
So, wow, you have talked about so many things. You've talked about access to government relief and an inability to actually access government relief. You've talked about needing to go back to village and hostile environments that actually, you know, individuals were escaping, and now they have to go back and access to healthcare. Like, there were many challenges that you have highlighted, but also for the community, but also challenges for Pema Kenya, especially with the closure of Mombasa and that inability to move outside of Mombasa. So what did Pema Kenya do to help to respond to the crisis being faced by the LGBTIQ community? And how did you manage to circumvent some of these challenges that you are facing as an institution to be able to then provide those services?
Yeah, I must acknowledge, as I said in my previous statement, that it was a learning process and everyone was trying to do something. And we didn't know exactly, not just Pema Kenya, but the country did not know what to do. For example, we didn't know whether to wear masks or not. There was that debate, you remember, that you can only wear masks when you are, you know, serving someone that is already COVID positive, or whether you yourself was COVID positive. But then all this changed, and then there was this rush for masks, and we didn't know where to get masks. Masks were expensive, so we were looking at where do we get the masks. So the first thing we did was to look for an alternative way to get masks that were not expensive. And at that time, if you remember, Yvonne, the Kitenge masks were not even available.
Yeah.
So you are only to buy, you are to buy the surgical masks, mm-hmm. which were actually expensive. One box which contains 50 pieces was going for around 500, I think. 500. No, 350 to 500, depending on the quality of the mask that you are looking for. So the first thing we did was to look for a person who can make us masks at a cheaper price. And the alternative again was Kitenge, which were, we were not even sure if it would protect us well. So then, but then we luckily we had a member who was willing to do that at a cheaper price. And we, the first thing we did was to order masks for two masks for every member. These were reusable masks which could be used, washed, and be worn again. So the two were actually good because then one would alternate between washing and having a new one. So yes, and one of the things that happened was that to fundraise because we were using monies that were there for emergency, but then the little money that we had was actually being exhausted by that time. So again, we had to reach out to other partners. So we reached out to Outright, for example. Outright was actually the first funder that funded us to support members. And not only, because we were also again weighing between. Now, we have the, if we have the funds, how do we distribute? For example, at that time, we were only looking at relief food, you know, because everyone was doing food. Even the government was doing food. So we were thinking about buying food and distributing them to members. But then the restrictions again. We could not do that. So we looked at all those options, either to buy vouchers or to buy food or to distribute money. Sending money was seemed to be an action, you know, like, for example, we didn't know if people wanted to travel. We didn't know if they wanted to go to hostel. We didn't know how if they wanted to food or to pay rent. So money was actually the best way to go. Our conversation with Outright was actually an eye-opener because for them, allowing us to disburse funds, you know, cash, because this is a very hard debate to talk about, you know, sending cash to members. So accountability issues, but the use of M-Pesa made things easier because then there is easy to retrieve the how that was used. So with the funds that we got from Outright, we already had other conversation, other donors who are willing to give to top up on that. But that was just the first month. So with the Outright money, we sent out 5,000. Which was actually a standard for people, for our members. When you look at the members, the statistics we have about members, the rent they are paying, that was actually enough to pay some rent for many, for the majority, and actually to have some 1,000 pending for other bills. So yes, but then came on board with a long time, came on board other donors, and therefore we extended that support for 3 months. So from the month of May, June, and July, we actually supported all the members to with 5,000 every single month. And thanks to Outright and thanks to other partners, for example, FRI, COC, GALC, even GALC, our own coalition, supported us, amongst many others that I might not be able to mention here. So yeah, so apart from the relief, we also we thought that there are other needs people might be needing counseling. We are also looking at the levels of violence within our members. People were not used to staying together close the whole day, 24 hours together. At this time, they were having that. So you get to learn people and get to and also with other stress coming, you know, less income, less food, you know, other conflicting issues. Mm-hmm. And there was increasing violence. And therefore, we need to mitigate about that. So we had counselors. So lucky for us, we have internal counselors and we also have external counselors. And that came in handy. So basically, that's what we did. The wellness of the members and also relief food, you know, relief funds for the members.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great. I mean, that is amazing. The amount of work that you have been able to do for the members, like during this time, I think that is very impressive. But I think the reality is that, especially in Kenya, in our context, we are getting to a point where our cases seem to be on the rise. And for some time, we actually thought that the state was going to put in place more or stricter measures to limit the spread of the virus. But so far we've seen that we have been really left to our own devices, and it's for each and every one of us to take responsibility at this particular time to ensure that we limit the spread of the virus. Like, so I think my question then to you would be, what after the 3 months, then what next for PEMA Kenya? What do you think needs to be done to respond to the plight of the LGBTIQ community post now the 3 months that you had resources to help cushion community members? What more needs to be done? And by who? Who do you think needs to come on board to help mitigate some of the challenges that are being faced?
Thank you very much, Yvonne. Before I speak on the recommendations on what should be done and who should come on board, maybe I should also tell you the impact of what happened after the funding, after the support to the members and stuff like that. So one of the things that is sure is that with the intervention about counseling and general wellness, we have seen reduction for the first 2 months, actually 2-3 months. Up to the 3rd month, we had a lot of intimate partner violence, and we really had to call in, have a call in counseling sessions with our in-house counselors reaching out to the members. And we saw a greater reduction of violence in terms of members and members fighting each other. We also managed to, with the little support, one thing we realized is that members came together because now rent was becoming expensive, and even after you paid rent, what do you eat there? So members now decided negotiating with each other, because we encourage people to do that, to talk to each other. So if you can live together, 3 of you, you could save because you could pay house rent, but then you can still have something to do. You know, these kind of things are things that we never thought of before. But you're seeing this conversation, members being able to support each other and being able to coexist. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those are some of the impacts that I can say. And also, we did not know how much the little support that we are offering would impact. And at some point, after you send out money, the feedback you get, members are calling and mm-hmm. saying that, you know, my child was sick. I didn't know who to call. And now I've received treatment. I think I also shared with you mm-hmm. some of those texts from the members, and also voice notes from the members that were really appreciative of that. And for me, that was really an eye-opener for the organization to start thinking on what is the long-term, now going back to your question, what is the long-term thing? Because COVID seems to be here to stay. So what we have done as an organization is to look into sustainability of the members beyond funding. What happens when you cannot be funded anymore for the COVID relief? What we have done is that we have ventured into social economic empowerment programs. For example, one of the donors that supported us gave us money that could not be distributed. So if you remember, I talked to you about whether we are allowed to distribute money or not. So now this particular donor was not able to allow us to do that. But then they were willing to give us relief funds. So we want to figure out what are we going to do with the funds. So what we did is that to look for the sustainability way. So we spoke to our members, and we had 2 members that could offer tailoring. Because we did that, we still need masks. We need to have masks being produced within our own reach. So we have bought tailoring machines, and we have members doing that. And we have even the 2 that knows how to tailor are actually training others to do the tailoring. So it could be internal tailoring, but also after learning, they could also produce masks that they can sell, as much as PEMA Kenya, the ones that we are producing, are not selling. Now, another gap that was there that realized was for our women, sanitary pads. How do we get the sanitary pads for the members? But then we also knew, we learned that our members are able to make reusable sanitary pads. Mm-hmm. So we are also producing that internally. So as we talk about relief food, we are also talking about making members also independent, so that beyond the relief food, they are able to do other things. So apart from that, we are also looking at making sanitizers. So sanitizers, locally sanitizers, but standard sanitizers. So we have spoken to KEBS, we have spoken to other people that are doing this, and they have to advise us on what to do. And so that's one of the things. We have not started doing this, but that's the next step that we are going to do. We are going to work on. Yeah, so basically that's what we have done. But then on the recommendation then, more funding, we send in people to support us to enhance, you know, to make this better, to work on the sustainability better. Because we are also learning in the course of this. This is not an area of speciality, but we are learning in the course of doing this. So we need people that can stand with us to support the thoughts that we have, because we are getting these thoughts from the members on sustainability, so that in future, we are not going to reach out, going back to people asking them to support us with the 5,000 per month, which might not be sustainable. On the other hand, I'm also calling for, this is maybe beyond my Kenya mandate, but it's something that's still within my heart. Beyond my Kenya membership, who might be enriched with services, health services, and other needs, there are also refugees that are LGBT who need to be supported, because during this COVID time, very little has been done for LGBT refugees in the camps. Because remember, these are people that cannot move out of the camps to go and access health services, even if the boundaries are not closed. They are not able to access beyond specific, and I'm talking about specific LGBT services. Because though the government argues that in the camps, there are hospitals, clinics, but we also want clinics that are also serving the MSM and the transgender person or the lesbian persons who are refugees. So my call is basically to support refugees, LGBT refugees, but also to continue the sustainability of the LGBT communities beyond the relief funding.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much, Ishmael, and thank you for a wonderful conversation. I know we are still going to be continuing some of these conversations later in the day. So thank you, Ishmael, for taking the time to speak with me today for Outright TV, a podcast and video series which brings to light stories of LGBTIQ people and allies across the globe as we face the pandemic together. This was Yvonne Mwamari, Africa Program Officer for Outright Action International. And today I was speaking to Ishmael Bahati from Kenya. Once again, thank you, Ishmael. My colleagues and I will be back soon with more stories. Thank you so much.